Welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Mariah Tinger, and I'm pleased to be joined by DR Tucker, the prolific commentator. And this show is for the week of November 18th, 2018. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about the Sunrise Movement protest in Washington, D.C., and about the new and strong words coming from Democrats about taking control of the climate agenda. So, DR, thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
So, there was the Sunrise Movement protest in D.C. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was down there. I don't know if she was leading it. It was a group called the Sunrise Movement. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes. So last week, about 200 climate activists, mostly associated with the Sunrise Movement, which is a group that my understanding is that the Sunrise Movement was a climate group that sort of formed out of the Dakota Access Pipeline protests. And they were joined by Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. They essentially took over the offices of House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, who's expected to once again become the Speaker of the House, basically urging the strongest action possible in terms of addressing carbon pollution, what they want a commitment to on the part of the new Democratic majority in the House is a commitment to what's known as a Green New Deal. And according to David Roberts in a great piece in Vox, the policy proposals of the Green New Deal are 100% of national power generation from renewable sources, the building of a national smart grid, the upgrading of every residential and industrial building for state-of-the-art energy efficiency, comfort, and safety, the full decarbonization of the manufacturing, agricultural, and other major industries, the full decarbonization of transportation and other infrastructure, of the funding of massive investment of carbon capture and sequestration, and making green technology a major export of the United States. So this is what they want the new House majority to commit to. They're also pushing for, in response to Nancy Pelosi's expressed commitment to bringing back the Select Committee on Energy Independence and Global Warming, what they want is for all the members of that committee to be committed to the Green New Deal and for them to fully and unilaterally reject any campaign contributions from anyone associated with the fossil fuel industry.
So it's almost like divesting, but divesting your campaign.
Exactly.
This is going to take us a little bit sideways, but it's something I am often wondering about. So it's being branded the Green New Deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I've always struggled with in the environmental movements is that people view environmental issues as something you do for the trees or for tree huggers. And we're at the point where it has nothing to do with that. It's completely about our own ability to survive and thrive as humans, right? To not be dying in these wildfires or these hurricanes or all of these things that aren't going to happen to us in three generations, but we're seeing them now. But on the flip side of that, the other thing about these initiatives is, and I don't know if they talk at all about this, but they create a lot of new jobs. They create infrastructure jobs. They create good long-term 40-year jobs, more even than the fossil fuel industry can create. And there's a whole bunch of studies out of Stanford with a lot of information about that. And so, you know, when you say this Green New Deal, it couples it to me a lot with tree hugging, and I'm as big of a tree hugger as anyone else, but I feel like it's really important to not brand it in a way that makes people think it's about just saving the trees, because that's the tagline. It's going to cost us a bunch of money to save the trees, and people, we've got too much to worry about to save the trees. There's kind of that general philosophy. So I don't know. What do you think about that, DR?
Well, I have a different perspective. I think the term Green New Deal may be off-putting to some people because it's of an association with controversial figure of recent vintage, Jill Stein, who, when she ran for the first time for the Green Party in 2012, was talking about a Green New Deal and repeated that conversation in 2016. And people who think that Hillary Clinton didn't have her own Green New Deal voted for Stein instead, and that is widely perceived to have Ralph Nadered.
It's a verb.
Hillary Clinton in the 2016 election. But on the other hand, the term Green New Deal is appropriate in the sense of the progressive radio host Tom Hartman has talked about how progressive activists need to sort of recapture the spirit of FDR. And obviously FDR talked about the New Deal, and obviously it makes sense to have this be sort of the next generation New Deal, the 21st century New Deal, built around the biggest problem of the 21st century. So the concept, I would say, is sound from that perspective.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, it's the reflection back to the FDR New Deal, which is widely regarded as very successful at sort of lifting us to a good place. But the more recent historical connection may be problematic.
Yeah, it certainly beats the raw deal being proposed by the advocates of carbon polluters.
That, like I said, that was a little bit of an aside. So let's go back to what they're talking about. So they want decarbonization and 100% renewable, a lot of really great things on this. Do they talk at all about some of the economic advantages?
According to David Roberts, they've also discussed economic equity. They want economic equity to be part of the Green New Deal. They believe, according to Roberts, that this is, quote, a historic opportunity to virtually eliminate poverty in the United States and to make prosperity, wealth, economic security available to everyone participating in the transformation. The Sunrise Movement is calling for, among other things, a job guarantee, measures to combat income inequality, and perhaps even a universal basic income. So essentially what they're saying is that this transition can not only be an environmental benefit, it can essentially eliminate income inequality at the same time. So really going big, and there may be a short time period in which in the late 2010s, early 2020s, political power is out of the hands of political reactionaries. In the short time period, it's in the hands of political progressives. Go as aggressive as possible on both income inequality and the climate crisis.
Yeah. So, you know, I was, after the elections, the midterm elections, I was definitely disappointed. I know we recorded a show, I think the day after, and it was hard to be upbeat, right? Because, well, largely I was frustrated because a lot of the propositions were voted down in Washington. And
I think the one in Nevada won, and I think one in Arizona and Colorado, they lost fairly badly.
That's right. Washington, Colorado, and Arizona lost. And it was disappointing, right, as we talked a little bit about. But I've been reading a lot of articles that are saying, really, enough with trying to find ideas that reach across the aisle, ideas that are bipartisan. You know, it used to be that environmental issues got support from both sides. In fact, oftentimes even more from the right than from the left. And now it's become this really dug-in political issue where people on the right just, not everyone, of course, but a vast swath, just refuse to support any sort of environmental or climate initiatives. And the articles I've been reading recently are like, forget it. Stop trying to reach your hands across the aisle. Make this our platform. Dig in. Go big. Take control of the climate agenda. Talk in big ways about the problems that we can fix with a really strong plan like this Green New Deal. And just go for it. And don't worry about the other side, you know. And it's interesting, and in some ways it's heartening too. I mean, I'm all for bipartisan because I think that this is something that affects all of us, and it would be nice to have everyone on board. But my bigger issue is that I want something to be done about the climate, and whatever it takes is kind of my priority. And so this might be the right way to go.
I would agree in the sense that I think historians are going to say bipartisanship on the issue died in that period between mid 2009 and mid 2010, when John McCain in 2009 and then Lindsey Graham in 2010 basically made it clear that they had no interest whatsoever in getting cap and trade legislation through the United States Senate, and they're basically abandoning that issue. That's when bipartisanship on this issue died, and you can make an argument that the burial was in the 2018 midterm elections. And also in terms of basically going big and going for a big picture vision, again, you know, people have often compared this transition of the economy to when Kennedy said he was going to put a man on the moon.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Did Kennedy say, let's work on a bipartisan way to get a man on the moon? He said, no, we're going to get this done. And, you know, damn the torpedoes and full speed ahead. And sometimes you have to have that vision. Look at the other side of the aisle politically in terms of this, in terms of partisan divides. When Ronald Reagan said that government was the problem, he wasn't speaking in a bipartisan fashion. He was speaking in explicitly partisan fashion because he had a goal he wanted to achieve. Now there are goals that the Sunrise Movement, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Nancy Pelosi, and others say need to be achieved. And when you have a goal, you can't stop and listen to people who want you to get only 50% of that goal or 75% of that goal, or to mitigate that goal to appease their sort of perspective. You have to go all the way in.
Well, it's time to put the blinders on and just have a singleness of purpose. Go big or go home. Mm-hmm. Have you heard at all what Nancy Pelosi's reaction was?
Well, I think that the belief is that Pelosi is very sympathetic to this and very open to this, and that Pelosi is of the perspective that FDR had when, you remember the famous story about FDR going to labor activists in 1933 and saying, you know, I know there are things you want me to do. You have to make me do them. You have to build the political will that's going to make me do them. And the perception is that Pelosi is basically saying that you guys have to bring this pressure so that I can make this move. That, again, go back to all the activist pressure for years for healthcare reform that led to the Affordable Care Act, or the pressure, you know, that was symbolized in the March on Washington that led to the passage of civil rights and voting rights legislation. It is that activist pressure that leads to action on Capitol Hill. And this is the next generation of that, I would say.
I hope that that is the case. Sometimes people sort of get hard pressed for which cause do they want to fight for right now, you know? And of course, the media is a great big influence on that. When you have all these, as we were talking about last show, you have all these wildfires, and not all that often is it being mentioned that they're connected with climate change and dry conditions due to climate change. And you have all these hurricanes, and one out of 10 reporters, maybe at best, mentions that the hurricanes are exacerbated by the warmer waters in the oceans. And so certainly we need to hear that kind of stuff to get folks saying, oh yeah, climate change is not a down the road thing. It's a happening now thing. And we need to turn that ship around. And that's when you can sort of maybe build some more priority in it as a, for an activist pressure for politics. I don't always see the priority for it right now. I often hear people saying, yeah, I care about climate change, but healthcare is more important to me, or whatever the issue they're going for is a higher precedence.
It will be very interesting to see if there will be similar activism in 2019 as discussions heat up about who will basically try to become the 46th president of the United States. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of pressure among these activists to basically say that the next commander in chief has to be a true leader on this.
Yeah, absolutely. Every election, the voting population changes. And I do think that young voters, you know, the ones that are becoming 18, are very motivated on climate issues. And as the demographics of the sort of voting public change, that's also, I think, hopeful. I'm hopeful to see it as a major platform for future elections. And of course, having the House will help us to some degree. I don't know. What do you think? Anything else to add to that, DR?
Yeah, all I can say is I know there's the old Barney Frank line about, you know, voting is better than marching. But, you know, you can make an argument for both the voting and marching working together as something that can lead to a sunrise of a different sort.
Yeah, march to the voting booths. All right, that does it for us today. We'll put up some links on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog, and you can find a link to our show on our Facebook page at Mass Climate Action. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher and all of those other typical podcast apps that are out there. And so we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the U.S. put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks, everyone, for listening. Thank you, DR, for joining me.
Thanks.
We'll talk to everyone again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.